This is Millie Brussel. This is the second half of a program called World Watchers, program number 755, in case you picked it up in the middle or the beginning or almost the end of the first half hour. Bibliography sheets are available of these broadcasts. The tapes are also available in case you want to have the tape and didn't tape it off the air. You can write to me, May, M-A-E, Brussel, just like it sounds, P.O. Box 22511, Carmel 93922. And I'll give you the source of information for these particular stories. The very dangerous appointment, along with Harry Schauderman, like a soldier in place in Brazil, is the appointment of Frank Wiesner, who's been nominated to become the new ambassador to Egypt. Considering what is going on there and my firm belief that Mubarak is being set up to be murdered and a military coup to be put into place, in as if that wasn't a military coup when Anwar Sadat was murdered, but it's getting farther right. The far right that Nancy Reagan and Deaver are afraid of are ready to surface, and that far right surfaced in South Africa this week where the whites were killing the whites and the swastikas were there, and I'll do more on that if I have time. The right will be killing the white on white, and the difference is being met looking at the barrel of a gun, and as I say, the symbols of the Fourth Reich are visible in South Africa as this slaughter is taking place, and now it is the countries are going farther right than they were before. The United States is pushing the president and the Secretary of State, and also this is taking place, sending Mr. Wiesner to Egypt at this time. Now, he doesn't have the name Frank Wiesner Jr. He doesn't have the number 2 after him, but he is indeed the son of the Wiesner who is described so well in John Loftus's book, The Bolera Secret. Just a couple of references to his father. It describes, this is page 72, in the early days of the Office of Policy Coordination, Wiesner was the man in charge of it. He knew people in Washington. He was a man of independent wealth. He was familiar with the news media, which is very important for these operations, such as James Reston and Arthur Crock of the New York Times and members of the State Department and the Alsop brothers and so forth, and British editors, and it cites their names. And Loftus says Wiesner was obsessed by an anti-communism that he had developed in his encounters with the Soviets in the Balkans, not the Nazis in the Balkans, and in post-war Germany, because Germany had lost to the Soviets, and it was the driving force behind the Office of Policy Coordination. He threw off ideas for rolling back the Soviet Empire like a human pinwheel. And this goes into the people that he worked with, such as Kermit Roosevelt, who was instrumental in helping overthrow Iran, getting rid of Mossadegh and putting in the Shah of Iran, Tracy Barnes of the CIA, Cord Meyer Jr., who now writes for Reverend Moon and Arnaud de Borchgrave, and William Colby, who referred to them is an atmosphere as of an order of Knights Templar, but these are the Knights of Malta, a great many of them are. By the summer of 1948, Loftus wrote, when Wiesner flew to Germany, circumstances combined to permit him to lay the groundwork for a unique intelligence operation. Now get these dates in terms of what I had on the air last week of the Kurt Waldheim story. In 1948, he flew to Germany to lay the groundwork for his unique operation. In 1948 is when the daughter of Alan Dulles married the gentleman who recommended Kurt Waldheim to be the secretary of the foreign minister of Austria, where he could travel into Austria and to the United States and so forth. The presidential election was looking good. It was approaching. He was a dedicated Republican, hoping to have a Dewey victory. And, of course, when Truman got in, the wheels started rolling with Eisenhower and Nixon as the vice president. And when the two Kennedys were killed, Nixon took over the Dewey operations that were set up in these early years in 1948. He goes on to say, Wiesner explained his plan to recreate the SS Underground, that is the Gestapo SS, recreate their network in Eastern Europe, in Belarus, Russia, and in the Ukraine through General Clay in several lengthy meetings. And next week, I won't have time this week, I'm going right into the sabotage of the Chernobyl atomic plant and my belief more positive, and I'm putting together a lot of work to do just 1 hour on that. But they recreated the SS, and those people, I believe, are behind the lines in Russia that did this time to the Soviet Union. But Loftus writes, once those networks were revived, That's the Waffen-SS, the Gestapo, with a thousand-year Reich goal. They could be used to cache supplies of arms and equipment for special forces. Wiesner believed the Soviet Union would start to disintegrate from internal rebellions, and now they're having internal problems because of the atomic plant, and it didn't blow up, but the problems that they had there with the disaster that leaked the nuclear material into the air and around Russia, and it will bring not rebellions but a lot of problems. What he wanted, he said, was only a matter of time before Western powers would be involved in war, World War III, and Wiesner's underground armies would play a major role in helping overthrow the Soviet Empire. And Wiesner was very important in that. He said, you have to begin preparations immediately. But by 1950, that's when the Korean War began. That's when Otto von Bolschwing of the Waffen-SS came to this country and was hiring Helene von Damm from Austria in Sacramento to work for Reagan. He began his plans by 1950. He knew that many people he wanted to recruit were still being hunted. They were Nazis. They had pro-Nazi activities, and they had to be protected. The CIC, which is the organization that protected them, at the direction of Congress, was going to try to prevent Nazi war criminals from emigrating to the United States. The CIC was not obstructed. Wiesner's training program was going on. It took place mostly in America, and he would be free to have his Nazi politicians recruit commando units to guide Western forces in future invasions of Russia, and we're just on the brink of that now. He could establish governments in exile, which is what we've done in all of these countries, and prepared even in South Africa and in Chile and in the Philippines in case one falls, we have the other one, and they would assist with the occupation. Wiesner and General Clay were confident of Tom Dewey's election, and then they would be free to operate over the board, but because he didn't win, it was put more as a subterfuge or covert operation to bring the SS into the United States intelligence. And he said, after all, the Dulles brothers were key figures in the Republican election campaign. They were the most ardent supporters of OPC's political action program, which was to get ready for World War III. And until the defeat of Truman, it was essentially to use the Belarusian Nazis and so forth in our administration through John Foster Dulles and Allen Dulles. And, of course, Allen Dulles was removed from John Kennedy because that hidden government behind his back. And then he was put on the Warren Commission, and many of the Belarusian Nazis were involved working with our Defense Department in setting up the story of Oswald the Loner. So Mr. Wiesner, Frank Wiesner, the son, who's been working 20 years in the State Department, is ready to move into Egypt at this time. And Allen Dulles' daughter in 1948 married a man in Austria, Fritz Molden, Austrian Publishing Empire. So the links of Dulles in 1948 with his family, and of course he was in Bern, Switzerland from 1943 to 45, already setting up the Waffen-SS and planning their next moves. Just to summarize, because this is very, very important, Ronald Reagan is in the White House without Mr. Deaver, without William Wilson, without William Clark. George Bush can be pushed aside. The newspapers were having articles this week that Paul X. Salt is the favorite to become president. That was decided 25 years ago, by the powers that be, that Paul X. Salt would be the president. When I said that about Reagan, nobody believed me, but we'll see what happens with Lex Salt's suit and his possible links to organized crime. I don't think crime is even a factor anymore. Look at the re-election of Jackie Presser after he was indicted for being the new president of the Teamsters. So the appointment of Mr. Schotterman in Brazil, of Mr. Wiesner in Egypt, are very, very important. And again, the Haig, Kissinger, Kramer team are in the background, surfacing, having interviews. Haig is portraying himself as the liberal. He had articles this week, "I wouldn't have bombed Libya like Reagan did." And he's pushing the Jewish vote, going to Hillcrest Country Club and the Jewish organizations. That's just one example in L.A. But very, very close to the Jewish group and Israel, and pushing himself off as somewhat of a moderate when he was the one that was ordering the attacks against Gaddafi in 1981 and was ready to take over the country. If a coup had taken place, if the president had been murdered and died, he'd be working there with George Bush, and George Bush's family was close to the Hinckley family, and he also was close to Francesco Pazienza and the plot to kill the Pope. That team are waiting in the sidelines as these other people are getting into very interesting connections. And a little bit more about Mr. Waldheim. There are as many articles out now about him as Deaver, but they're very important. I just want to cite one or two. One in the Washington Times, again, very interesting, the amount of material that is coming out of that newspaper, and it's fairly cheap to get. If you're interested in the subjects I talk about, you really should subscribe to the Washington Times. The article is titled, Man Claims Waldheim Had a Torture Chamber. This is a gentleman named Joseph Weil, who lives in Ferndale, New York, who spends a lot of time between Israel and New York. He was into forced labor in Brest-Litovsk, L-I-T-O-V-S-K, in 1944. I should be able to pronounce that better, but I always get stuck on that one. He said he and 10 other Jewish forced laborers were housed in a building where Waldheim's offices were. He was ordered to clean them. In another room, there was a locked door. Waldheim had the key. No one went in, but it was a torture chamber. There were whips there, manacles fastened to the wall. And one day, Waldheim asked Weil to go into this room, Joseph Weil, because there was Hebrew on the wall, and he wanted to read it, and it was written in blood. Evidently, somebody was tortured or murdered in there, and before they died, it was written in blood. And Waldheim pointed it and said, what does that mean? And he said it was Yiddish. It said, brothers and sisters, may those of you who survive avenge our blood. And he translated these words from Waldheim into German. And he was with him and at the Russian front, and Waldheim had a map of the Russian front with movements of the partisans. And next to the map, he had a copy of Hitler's Mein Kampf. And this man claims that he was very much part of these operations, and he was afraid of Waldheim. He was supposed to go with him as a translator because he spoke Hungarian, but he wouldn't go. He said, when Waldheim was first proposed as Secretary General of the United Nations, Weil said, I stepped forward and offered to give information. No one was interested. Now, that sounds like my trying to give information about Fritz Kramer, the mentor of Kissinger and Haig, working with Daniel Graham in Washington, D.C., this faceless, monocled German. And I've had no cooperation. A handful of researchers have helped me. Outside of that, I spent, when Ronald Reagan went to Bitburg, around $300 sending pictures and letters and mailings to every member of Congress. Never got an answer. And I sent them to Jewish organizations. And I want to do more about that next week also. I'm not this on this broadcast. But I know what it is to reach out and try to tell people, and nobody listens. And Mr. Weil said that he worked with him and knew him, and that it opened that door, and he knew that people were taken for what they called prisoner interrogations and special tasks, and then they were moved on for torture, kidnapping, and execution, and the villages were burned. So this fellow is very familiar with the past of Waldheim. Also, another story, Waldheim charges are called serious. The State Department Deputy Secretary of State John Whitehead is looking into the charges of Waldheim as a war criminal. Another article this morning from the Los Angeles Times, Waldheim evidence merits trial, Israelis say. And they say that if he were there, he would certainly be tried as a war criminal. He was more than an accessory to the fact, and he has been linked to the actual sending off and extermination, and now he's listed in their records and documents as being a part of the torture, personal torture and interrogation of various people. The New York Times had a long article last week, May 16th. Wiesenthal faults the Jewish Congress on Waldheim. I gave you a few quotations of that, how Wiesenthal says that's not his style to go after these people. Wiesenthal, as I've said many, many times, is a total fraud, and that's how Fritz Kramer and Waldheim stay in this country. I've approached the Wiesenthal people, of course, about Mengele. They're notorious about that cover-up, and about Fritz Kramer, and now the Waldheim. You can see publicly the stand they take. The World Jewish Congress was put down by Simon Wiesenthal, and Mr. Singer was put down. So just this week, the World Jewish Congress displayed papers in which they said that Waldheim was wanted by the UN War Crimes Commission. He said, I release these papers to show you that it's not Jews going after Waldheim. It isn't vengeance like we are being accused, you know, like Wiesenthal, of picking on Waldheim. He said, the reason we displayed this is to show we are not the accusers. The accusers are the UN War Crimes Commission. The World Jewish Congress has accused Waldheim of signing documents dealing with the killing of civilians in Yugoslavia, knowing about their deportations, also in Greece. So they presented those to show that they were not the accusers, that the documents exist accusing him of these crimes, and they are showing you the documents. Waldheim, as a response, hired a libel lawyer. He said he has a friend, Theo Petter, who will represent him. He says he doesn't want anybody ruining his reputation. That's what libel is, I suppose. And he'll take legal action if they say things that are untrue. But there are enough documents that will surface in England and Yugoslavia as they slowly ooze out to support the documents that exist, that it is a very serious matter, the background of Kurt Waldheim. The Los Angeles, no, the Monterey Herald, not the LA Times, had an article yesterday, Waldheim aid hits the witch hunt after the Israelis say evidence exists. And again, here he goes back to the original anti-Semitism, the man who wrote a paper on the resurrection of the Fourth Reich, and how they would follow Hitler, you know, in glorifying Hitler in 1944 to get a degree at the university and praising the resurgence of Germany to save the world again. He now calls the Israelis on a witch hunt when it has surfaced that the United Nations has the record of his crimes. And the other papers should be released. Otherwise, you can't prove an unknown. But what is in England and also in the United States and Yugoslavia, I'm sure, would finalize the fact that he should be charged with murder. Now, just one quick subject I wasn't going to make a comment about, but I have to get in my two cents. That was the hands across America to aid the poor. It's very nice that they did it. I don't participate in a lot of this. I go to demonstrations of a kind. But I stayed away. Well, Monterey County didn't have, I guess I might have done if we had a section here. We actually didn't have it. But I watched Ronald Reagan holding hands with a few unknown people, children, I guess, of the staff around the White House. And the speech that he gave Saturday or a couple of days before about the poor, in a sense, Ronald Reagan, who I never defend, was absolutely right in what he said in this sense. He said, ignorance, not lack of aid, causes hunger. Now, Ronald Reagan, no matter what you think of him, as I say, you have to say he's right. Because any smart person would have known about Reagan and would have gone to the poll and voted, much less being reelected. If they couldn't do research on the 8 years in California, all they had to do is look at the first 4 years and every single cent that would alleviate poverty, that would go to health programs, that would go to education and agriculture is put into the weapon system. Ronald Reagan took a budget and ran for office to balance it and then doubled from George Washington through Jimmy Carter and left us with this terrible debt that it hardly can ever be paid off. So ignorance is one of the causes of hunger because people can vote. You don't have to be too schooled in what's going on. If you vote for Adolf Hitler, if you vote for Ronald Reagan, you are responsible for your own problems. And in that sense, he's absolutely right. If 40% of the country voted for him, or 43%, and most of them didn't vote at all, then it was total ignorance, even the ignorance of Jesse Jackson, to split the party, the Democratic Party, or Geraldine Ferraro with her mafia connections to become vice president and not insist that Mr. Mondale get somebody who isn't recommended by Roy Cohn. Reagan, other headlines on the subject, quotations of Reagan. Reagan doesn't believe anyone going hungry due to the cutbacks. Well, it's not due to the cutbacks, it's due to the weapons contracts. And one is equal to the other. Cutting back isn't the problem of doing that, but then the deaths and the non-productivity of the warfare state is what's killing us off and closing the farms and closing the businesses and sending the steel overseas, buying imported steel in our factories and manufacturing everything from our cat food to shoes and everything being brought in this country and buying more from foreign countries than we can sell out to other countries and increasing tremendous problems. Reagan also said another big quote in the newspaper, because I take so many, Reagan quotes, the hungry just don't know where to go. And again, the hungry better go to the polls, because there was the Humphrey Hawkins bill for full employment, We should have a full health plan like Canada. And they don't know where to go. And that's why, that's one of the problems. And I'm not being cynical. Those old bag ladies you see around New York probably voted for Dewey. They voted for Eisenhower and Nixon. I'll bet you, if you took a poll of their politics or didn't vote at all, if they were astute in knowing that they can just, before they ever got on the streets as bag people, or this terrible impoverished area in Virginia, the people should have some way of knowing that when election comes, they do have some choices. And if they just stay home and have no choice, then they're ignorant, and Reagan is putting these people down. And the answer to a lot of this is education and getting people to know what control they have or don't have over their own lives. Mary McGrory had an article this week, "Go to Prison and Learn to Read." She's not aware of the power system. The whole purpose of the school system and the mill that they put people through is how not to read, to be illiterate. That's why one-third of this country today is actually illiterate. They don't know how to read, because if you read, you'd read some of the articles I cite on the air week after week, or the books that are out, or the publications that would change your life. As long as you stay illiterate and don't know what's going on, this is the control they have over you. And to think that they're going to send you to prison to learn to read, what if you decide to read George Jackson or some of the other material, the speeches of Salvador Allende or Malcolm X? What if you could read? Then the power structure would be in trouble. So they don't want you to read, and that isn't going to be the solution. Prison isn't going to teach you to read. They leave you a vegetable to make sure when you get out you're as illiterate as you went in. Now, about hands across America, I thought about war papers that were published just recently about Hirohito, some of the letters the Emperor of Japan wrote during the war. And he wrote to his eldest son, blaming Japan's defeat on overconfidence of the people who misjudged the power of the United States and Britain. And one of these was cited in the newspaper recently. He wrote it September the 9th, 1945, after we had dropped the atomic bombs. He said, "The people of our country were overconfident of the imperial country and made little of Britain or the United States. Our military men placed too much significance on spirit and were forgetful of science." And this is exactly what happens with "We Are the World," or "Feed Africa," or "AIDS for Africa." Help the farmer. Hey, it's great. Everybody's holding hands. They're rubbing shoulders. They're doing the Leo Buscaglio love story. Love will conquer all. I hear this all the time. It's the spirit that conquers it. When you're looking down the barrel of a gun, it isn't the spirit at all. There are private armies in the United States. There are private armies in the Philippines, armed with billions of dollars coming in, not millions, but billions, to overthrow these various countries. And it takes more than the spirit of people holding hands and singing. They're not psychically going to bring these forces down to their knees. It's not going to solve the dangerous world debt. This subject is going on all the time, and what is happening in the United States is not going to be solved by holding hands and singing, "We are the world." We ain't nothing, and those people don't know it, and they have an overblown intention that they are self-important. Love is an energy force like electricity, and I believe in love as a force, but it has to be a genuine love. And to love your country and love people, you have to invest time and energy. You have to read. You have to study. You can't just be depressed about it. Any social change came through a lot of hard work and a lot of people who were gunned down, like the Kennedys and Malcolm X and Medgar Evers and Che Guevara and Adlai Stevenson and people that Ralph Bunche of the UN or Dag Hammarskjöld, Olof Palme. These peacekeepers are put down by guns. They have plenty of love, but they don't meet love. And in order to spread love, you have to know the science of the bullets and the ballistics and how the peacekeepers are never allowed to live. And someday, a few will catch on. Not enough know now. And the other are cowards and go back to groups like the EST or these institutes that teach you to love each other. And that will solve the world problems. Now, a friend who listens to World Watchers brought me a scrap this book this week, two scrapbooks that belonged to her husband. He passed away several years ago, and he kept a record of events that took place from the time the atomic bomb fell. She brought me two of the four scrapbooks. She has to look in the attic for the other two. And these are news accounts that are priceless of where the mindset of our government and our military were when World War II was over. and throughout the weeks for years to come, I'll share these with you and give you the dates, and maybe you can go to the library and photocopy some of these, but they're just wonderful, and I might try to photocopy them and get them out in book form for you. One of the articles was printed October the 19th, 1945. The bomb fell in August. The title of the article is First Atom Bomb Suit for Ruined Peaches Filed by Salem County, this is Salem, New Jersey, for $400,000. And these are orchard owners in New Jersey who blamed the atomic bomb for ruining the peach crop in 1944. The bomb didn't drop until 1945, but the peach trees, the leaves were falling off, the trees were dying, and goodness knows what the people got in them. And there was uranium in the system. They got a chemist to check the uranium. And near them was a DuPont factory. DuPont was processing to make uranium. The bomb didn't just happen in Los Alamos, where it was exploded the first time in July 45. The DuPonts had factories in New Jersey, the Sun Oil Company, and General Chemical Company. Those are three companies they sued. But they couldn't sue until the first bomb was dropped, because the government counter-espionage came to them and shut them up. They didn't know what the firm was making. Now, DuPont is the organization behind Advanced Genetic Sciences, with putting this bacteria on our strawberry, and goodness knows what secrets there are there. The Sun Oil is run by the Pugh family, and Mr. Senholz on the board of Western Goals is a part of the this operation, the Sun Oil Company. And they sued these three companies, this particular group from Camden, New Jersey. And the attorney said that the peach growers noticed that they had to hire chemists to find that there was hydrogen fluoride fumes in the vicinity and near their hometowns, and free uranium they found, the basis of the atomic bomb that they were making in farmlands and where people lived, the orchards, the homes, just like AGS was going to test their bacteria right here in Castroville, right next to homes and schools and so forth, and put the live bacteria. So the government came to them and said, you can't sue. They hired an attorney in Philadelphia, and it was all very secret. And they said, being, of course, patriotic, we said nothing except to the DuPonts. And in return, the government, on information from the firm, sent a counter-espionage officer after us. We delayed our action until the fact of the atomic bomb was made public. And then they sued. They couldn't do anything until the bomb was dropped. But here are people that could lose their lives at that time. Now, October 17th in the New York Times, 1945, the announcement the atomic bomb could kill 40 million people. That's at that time. And we have increased the amount and the weight of, not the weight, but the quality of the bombs. So they're much, much larger. In 1945, Mr. Oppenheimer was saying, he's afraid of it, but it is true that a single night's raid on America could kill 40 million people in the congested cities if the bomb fell then. Now, another important item, well, I don't have too much time now, but I just want to mention that the NATO countries are concerned that Ronald Reagan is pushing to increase chemical biological warfare, and some of the NATO countries don't want it. Six of the 14 are against it. And what Reagan wants, Reagan gets, and the Senate has to have a vote very soon on what is called the disarray of NATO, because the United States is going to produce these weapons that we haven't had since 1969. Caspar Weinberger said, I intend to go through with the plan to have binary gas, and this is an issue in the news in 1986. In 1946, 40 years ago in January, a large article in New Yorker magazine, and you might look this up, January 13th, 1946, and also in the New York Times, bacterial warfare poses a problem as hard to solve as that of the atomic bomb. And this is a long article, but time is almost out. I'll read you some of it, because it was interesting to me to get these reprints from these old newspapers, because I said that there's so many people in the nuclear freeze marching against atomic bombs, children afraid of atomic bombs. They are getting in their food and in their air and in their water purposeful as well as coincidental chemicals that will cause their death right now. It isn't coming from the sky. You are ingesting it. I bet one out of every three people is ingesting stuff at the present time. A long subscriber to World Watchers asked me to do some segments on the radiation of food, and I'll do that next week for her. Any of you long listeners that have requests like that, that want more on that, I save these articles. But they knew in 1946 that bacterial warfare against large masses of population was the important story, not necessarily the atomic bomb. On the one hand, one is saying 40 million will die from that. On the other hand, 20 million are dying of AIDS in central part of Africa right now as a weapon. 4,000 scientists got together as soon as World War II was over, and within 6 months were ready to go into the bacterial warfare, which is a horrendous thought, thinking of the power and connections, say, of just AGS that I've been talking about, to the international companies, to Roman Haas, to IG Farben, to the plans for genocide and extermination from World War II that continued here. But the time is out now. I'll do more on this later and get back to these subjects. In the meantime, this is Mae Brussel, and I'll be back with you next week. And I want to thank you again for the mail, the letters, the articles, and the tape cassettes of other radio programs you're sending me. I really appreciate them very much. You take care, and we'll be back to continue next week.